Before we begin this episode of Gone Cold, we'd like to ask y'all a favor. Our good friend Arlene's uncle and best friend, Leon Lorales, was senselessly murdered on May 10th, 1996, just outside of Brownwood, Texas. If you'd like to hear more about the case, you can listen to our episodes by going back to May 2021. The case is complicated, and Arlene has been the lone force fighting for justice for Leon. That's where you can help. If you are able, please consider donating to the GoFundMe campaign to help Arlene commission a memorial for her uncle and, most importantly, hire a private investigator to find out what happened to Leon and bring his killer or killers to justice. We'll provide a link in this episode's show notes to Leon's GoFundMe. Again, if you can, please donate. Thanks, y'all.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Convicted killer Michael Keith Moore covered his bases fairly well when he told investigators he had dumped Rachel Cook's body in Matagorda Bay. It was not hard to believe that any trace of the young woman would have been long gone, washed out into the Gulf of Mexico, when Moore confessed to abducting, raping, and murdering the 19-year-old 4 years after she disappeared in 2006. But Moore likely knew that he could not lead investigators to the missing woman's personal items, ones that he told detectives he had buried when he made his admission. But that was part of the plea deal. So perhaps that's why Moore changed his mind when brought before a judge to make the plea official, instead pleading not guilty, further confusing and angering the Cook family who were present in the courtroom. It seems more likely than not that Moore's confession was bullshit, but still, there remains a chance, however scant it is, that he did kill Rachel Cook. But there's no shortage of other possibilities. Although nothing about what happened to Rachel is known, realistically. The most likely theory at this point, that she was abducted, sexually assaulted, and killed, although horrific and hopeless, isn't a difficult theory to come to. That's probably why Michael Keith Moore came up with the story he did, and knew he'd get a long period of special privileges as a result, because it resembled the theory law enforcement already had. Again, though, there are a couple individuals out there who are perhaps more likely to have harmed Rachel Cook. Men, or monsters rather, who were in the area at the time she disappeared, just like Moore, and who have a history of offenses that match the theory of what happened. If you're familiar with Texas true crime in general, you might also be familiar with the subject of this episode, a cop who used his power to satiate his own sick desires, to feed what seems to be a hatred of women and a need for control. A man who, many think, got away with murder and put an innocent man on death row in his place. On Friday, October 26, 2007, residents at a Georgetown, Texas apartment complex called 911 to report a domestic disturbance. Another resident and her boyfriend had been drinking with a couple friends at their unit and began arguing, and the argument had spilled into the parking lot of the complex. It was loud and sounded as if things might go bad fast, the caller told the emergency operator. Within minutes, three Georgetown police cars pulled onto the scene, including Patrol Sergeant Jimmy Lewis Fennell. They separated the 20-year-old woman and her boyfriend. During questioning, Sergeant Fennell discovered that the underage girlfriend was quite drunk. She was a dancer at a local strip joint, the boyfriend told Fennell when asked. The boyfriend was then placed in a police cruiser, and two of the police cars left, him inside one. The intoxicated young woman was left alone with Sergeant Fennell, who told her that her boyfriend was not under arrest. They'd actually taken him to get a hotel room so the two could cool off away from one another. The woman begged the policeman to bring her boyfriend back. He refused, but Sergeant Fennell told her he would take her to him at the hotel. The officer put the 20-year-old in the front passenger seat before getting behind the wheel. After driving for several minutes, the police cruiser came to a stop. It was not at a hotel, however. Instead, it was a dark, semi-wooded, and desolate park. Hauntingly, considering the Rachel Cook case, the young woman described the park as a jogging place, due to the fact that she could only see a concrete trail, thickets of trees, and grass. Sergeant Fennell told the woman to get out of the patrol car as she questioned their whereabouts. When they both exited the vehicle, he ordered her to dance. The young woman refused, and Sergeant Fennell became visibly angry. Suddenly, the policeman slammed the young woman against the back right-hand side of the cruiser. As he took off his belt, he described each threatening item it contained until he arrived at his firearm, which he took out and placed against the woman's head. Sergeant Fennell then raped the 20-year-old, unprotected, restraining her by holding her head against the vehicle with one hand. The young woman would later say that even though she'd never seen him before, he acted and said certain things like he knew her, but hated her. Though the victim could not account for how long this nightmare lasted, Officer Rapist was off monitor and unaccounted for a total of 2 hours. When he was finished with his depraved and unforgivable act, Sergeant Fennell ordered the young woman back into the patrol car, threatening to hunt her down and kill her should she tell anyone. Before dropping her back off at her apartment, Fennell handed the young woman his card, told her that he was going to meet up with her the following day after his kid's soccer game, and that she was going to be a good girl for him again. Once in the safety of her own home, the brave young woman immediately dialed 911 and asked for a rape kit. She told the emergency operator that a policeman, Sergeant Jimmy Fennell, had raped her. While waiting outside for the police to arrive, the woman remained on the phone with the 911 dispatcher. As two patrol cars approached, the young woman was overcome by fear when she realized one of them was Fennell. How could they send the cop who raped her? She frantically begged of the emergency operator as she ran from the responding officers. 911 said they had not asked for police to come to the scene at all, only an ambulance with a rape kit. Two officers chased her, cornered her, and hung up on 911 as they took her cell phone. They arrested the young woman for public intoxication, while Sergeant Fennell spoke with the ambulance personnel and sent them away. The victim of this terrible and inexcusable ordeal was then placed in a jail cell at the Georgetown Police Station for 9 hours. The following morning, detectives arrived to speak with her and take her to an out-of-town hospital to be examined. On December 20th, 2007, the Georgetown Police Department fired Sergeant Jimmy Fennell Jr. after his refusal to cooperate with an internal affairs investigation. He'd been taken off the job a couple days earlier after he was indicted on kidnapping and rape charges. However, just weeks later, the department reinstated Fennell, likely so he could resign and collect benefits, which he did a week later. Perhaps neither the Georgetown police nor the rapist himself imagined the case would go to trial. Still, Fennell had to answer for something, as hard as the department fought against it. Because going before a jury might land him a double 99-year sentence, one for the kidnapping charge and one for the rape, Jimmy Finnell Jr. decided to plead guilty to reduced charges, kidnapping and improper sexual activity with the person in custody. Undoubtedly, Williamson County District Attorney John Bradley wanted to prosecute Finnell, but the physical evidence was not there. He had not ejaculated inside the 20-year-old woman. District Attorney Bradley made it clear to reporters and to a judge that Finnell's victim, quote, wasn't treated like the victim of a sexual assault. She was treated like someone who needed to shut up and stop complaining, end quote. Though he didn't come right out and say the word corruption, D.A. Bradley certainly insinuated it when describing the Georgetown Police Department's handling of the investigation into the rape of this 20-year-old woman. See, the department put Finnell himself in charge of the investigation of this kidnapping rape, which allowed him ample opportunity to destroy or alter evidence against him. Sergeant Finnell hadn't written any reports, had ordered dispatchers not to record computer entries concerning the case, and consulted with his fellow officers, his buddies, about interviews with his rape victim. Since the plea deal had changed the very nature of the charges from something heinous and deplorable to something that sounded consensual but perhaps mischievous, Finnell's attorney scolded the media for continuing to report the incident as a sexual assault. That charge was dismissed, he told them. The young woman had only cried rape after somehow fooling herself that it was, Finnell's attorney seemed to be saying, and then she recanted after realizing that it actually was not. To this nonsensical bullshit, District Attorney Bradley responded with something more grounded in reality. He said, quote, Jimmy Finnell orchestrated a situation that put his victim in a position of fear of being killed, end quote. The 20-year-old had recanted the allegations of rape, but it was because Finnell, the very person who assaulted her, was in charge of investigating his own crime. Besides that, the terror in the voice of Finnell's victim on the 911 call to report the rape is evident and clear, and the panic when she realizes the rapist is the officer responding to her request for a rape kit is undeniable. Jimmy Lewis Finnell was sentenced to 10 years in prison for the kidnapping charge and 2 years for the improper sexual activity with the person in custody charge. He began his sentence in 2008 and was released in 2018. By no means the greatest travesty of justice in this case, but something that was also a result of the plea was the fact that Finnell only had to give up being a cop for good in exchange for not having to register as a sex offender. Anyway, he's performed heinous crimes before this one, which, along with the case described above, raised suspicions on him for the murder of his fiancée in 1996, and has some doubting the guilt of the person convicted for it. In 1995, 22-year-old Jimmy Lewis Finnell Jr. met 18-year-old Stacy Lee Stites at the Smithville Jamboree, a yearly fair and celebration of the town in which it's named, that includes things like a livestock show, a horseshoe tournament, coloring contests for the kiddos, and, of course, a contest to become the queen of the jamboree. Finnell and Stacy hit it off fast, and before Stacy even graduated from Smithville High School, they were a serious couple. After she graduated high school, Stacy and Finnell moved into an apartment in Giddings, Texas, above her mother Carol. The rookie cop at Giddings PD and Little League coach seemed to promise stability and protection for the typical small-town Texas young woman. By April 22, 1996, Stacy and Finnell were 5 months engaged, and that day, Stacy and her mother Carol planned and prepared for the upcoming wedding, which was only a couple weeks away. That evening, Carol giggled to herself as she saw Fennell and her daughter outside laughing and goofing off together. At about 8:30 p.m., Fennell later said, Stacy went to bed since she had to be up early for work, and he stayed up watching the news and a Discovery Channel program on thunderstorms and lightning until he dozed off. By the time he woke up, he claimed, Stacy had already left for work, about a 25-minute drive away at Bastrop's HEB grocery store in his 1995 maroon Chevy pickup. He didn't even hear her leave, Fennell would later tell police. At 5:23 a.m., now Tuesday, April 23rd, 1996, during a fairly routine patrol of the high school parking lot, Bastrop policeman Paul Alexander saw something unusual enough, a pickup truck. It was the only car in the lot. Officer Alexander approached the vehicle and ran the plates to check if it was stolen. The car belonged to Jimmy Lewis Fennell Jr. Perhaps, Alexander thought, the truck had broken down or ran out of gas, since it didn't appear to have been broken into or tampered with. Lying on the ground next to the driver's side door of the truck, the patrolman saw a portion of a dark-colored braided belt, about 6 inches in length, the buckle still intact. Soon after, an HEB employee who'd been concerned about Stacy's absence called her mother Carol to make sure everything was okay. Carol quickly called police and reported her missing. Two and two was put together, and Bastrop officers sealed the scene around the abandoned maroon Chevy truck and began investigating. When he discovered that police in Giddings and the Lee County Sheriff's Department were not actively investigating her disappearance, Detective David Board contacted Carol and began collecting information about her daughter. Meanwhile, Jimmy Fennell's truck was taken to a Bastrop tow shop to await transport to a Texas Department of Public Safety, or DPS, crime lab in Austin. Police sent for Jimmy Fennell to look over, but not touch, the vehicle for anything out of the ordinary. Fennell, a rookie policeman, identified several things out of place. One of Stacy's work sneakers was on the passenger side floorboard. The driver's side seatbelt was still buckled. There were broken pieces of plastic in the console, green like the cup Stacy used while traveling the 20-plus miles to work. The driver's seat was tilted back at a 45-degree angle. There was a large smudge on the truck's back window, passenger side, and a foamy substance that looked to be saliva was observed by Fennell on the carpet that covered the transmission hump. He also identified the piece of belt found at the scene as resembling the one Stacy wore to work, and carbon copies of checks from his checkbook. As we know from his conviction a decade later, it wouldn't be the last time Fennell was investigating something he had no business investigating. After providing help with the truck, Jimmy Fennell went back to he and Stacy's apartment in Giddings. Later that day, at around 3 p.m., a passing motorist made their way down a rural gravel road that ran off FM 1441 to pick wildflowers for his wife. But after only a moment spent admiring the picturesque countryside, a macabre and unwelcome sight took the place of a beautiful one. Amongst the overgrown and untamed beauty of the blackfoot daisies, purple coneflowers, and blue sage, on the slope of a ditch among the thorny brush, laid the partially nude body of a woman. After the Bastrop police contacted the Texas Rangers for assistance in searching for Stacy Stites, a DPS helicopter arrived and authorities barely had time to climb aboard when they found out a body matching her description had been found. They hurried to the scene where responding officers were waiting. Stacy wore only one shoe, her sock still clean. She wore a black bra and blue pants, the zipper of which was broken, and her work name tag sat in the crook of her leg. A white t-shirt was found near Stacy's body. Her exposed green underwear were still visibly wet. Tests for the presence of semen were conducted at the scene and produced positive results. Around the neck and throat of 19-year-old Stacy Stites, an extremely pronounced red indentation in the skin made the cause of death all but certain. The young woman had been strangled. Other evidence at the scene was collected, including two Busch beer cans from the opposite side of the road, and the remainder of the murder weapon, Stacy's belt. As the investigation into the murder of Stacy Stites continued, Travis County Medical Examiner Robert Bayardo determined that she had been vaginally and anally raped, likely punched multiple times in her head, strangled to death with the braided belt in which a piece was found outside Jimmy Finnell's truck, and cigarette burns and other scratches had been inflicted post-mortem. Detectives collected hair, blood, and saliva samples from Stacy's co-workers, friends, past classmates, former boyfriends, and even some of Jimmy Finnell's fellow policemen, including a Bastrop officer named David Hall. We'll get back to that guy. But even as the cops looked a little into Jimmy Finnell killing Stacy, which we'll also further explore, they quickly went a different route, and not totally without reason. 19-year-old Linda Schluter agreed to give a man a ride on November 9, 1996, but when it was time to drop him off, he attacked her and told her he'd kill her if she did not perform specific sexual acts on him. The man was suddenly frightened by approaching car lights, however, and fled in Linda's car. When shown a photo lineup, Linda picked out 29-year-old Rodney Rodell Reed as her attacker. This crime, detectives thought, seemed a lot like the Stites case a few months earlier. When first asked if he knew Stacy, Reed told Bastrop detectives that he did not. Later, however, his story changed, and he admitted to knowing her. On top of that, Reed admitted to having an affair with her, something that was no secret, apparently, and something that Stacy's fiancé, Jimmy Finnell, is said to have found out and subsequently threatened Reed about, according to witnesses. Even the cops knew about Stacy's affair with someone as they investigated Jimmy Finnell and theorized he'd found out and killed her. Reed had originally denied knowing her because he is black and Stacy was white. He was afraid of the possible backlash from the folks of small-town Texas, he claims, including getting railroaded for her slaying. That's an incredibly valid concern, it should be noted. Reed's DNA, which was already on file from a separate alleged rape, matched the semen found inside Stacy Stites' body and on her chest, which, if the two were indeed having an affair, as multiple individuals have said, makes perfect sense. Regardless, police moved in on Reed, theorizing that he somehow accosted her while he walked and as she drove, a theory that was never fully fleshed out, even by the time the case saw trial. Nearly a year after the sexual assault and strangulation of Stacy Stites, on April 4, 1997, Reed was arrested and charged with capital murder. He was convicted by a jury and sentenced to die by lethal injection. This episode isn't about the Stacy Stites rape and murder, or the guilt or innocence of Rodney Reed. It is, however, about the possibility that Jimmy Finnell, who lived and worked in Georgetown at the time, could be responsible for the disappearance of Rachel Louise Cook. The possibility that he and not Rodney Reed might have killed his fiancé certainly exists at this point, and it's necessary to explore exactly why before theorizing any involvement in Rachel Cook's case. Back in 1996, Jimmy Louis Fennell Jr., as Stacy Stites' fiancé, was, of course, a suspect from the get-go. But perhaps that was a smokescreen, as detectives and officers with the Bastrop Police Department would later be accused of going soft on him. Interestingly, police turned the man's Chevy pickup back over to him within 6 days of the discovery of Stacy's body, before it was fully processed, and even though it had been determined to be, essentially, the scene of the crime. Police neglected to search the couple's apartment, even though it was known to be the last place Stacy was seen. Now, polygraph examinations are a decent investigative tool, but they are far from reliable. Having said that, Jimmy Fennell Jr. failed 2 polygraph tests, and invoked his right against self-incrimination, the Fifth Amendment, instead of answering the question, "Did you kill Stacy?" among others. After the failed examination, Fennell stopped cooperating with the investigation. But that didn't really matter. Police ruled him out, claiming he did not have time to murder his fiancée, abandon the truck at Bastrop High School, and get back to the apartment in time to receive a call. That claim is preposterous, especially considering his good buddy, Bastrop policeman David Hall, lived just a block away from him in Giddings. Officer Hall's DNA would later be discovered on one of the Bush beer cans found across the road from Stacy's body, as would the DNA of another Bastrop cop, Edward Salmella. Before an arrest was made, and only a few months into the investigation, in fact, on August 3, 1996, Officer Salmella died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. Suicide. Salmella, by the way, was present when Jimmy Fennell inspected his own truck, looking for and finding clues. During later activity in the appeals process, witnesses came forward saying they saw Jimmy and Stacy together not long before she would have been killed. Also, a witness recalled the fiancé screaming, "fucking bitch," among another perhaps more powerful expletive that starts with a C, during a fight outside the HEB where Stacy worked. This wasn't long before the young woman wound up murdered. Another witness who attended police academy with Fennell in 1995 remembered the man saying that he'd choke Stacy with a belt if he ever found out she was cheating on him. While serving time in a Huntsville prison unit for his 2007 conviction, according to a fellow inmate, Fennell said,
"I had to kill my inward-loving fiancé."
The man's racism is certainly well known, and such claims were backed up by his former girlfriend, Pamela. Jim Clampett, a former sheriff's deputy who was at Stacy's funeral, said that Fennell looked at her body in the casket and said,
"You got what you deserved."
There are other points to be made concerning the conviction of Rodney Reed and the lack of a proper investigation into Jimmy Fennell Jr. concerning the 1996 murder of Stacy Lee Stites. But there are also many separate incidents that illustrate the man's issues, let's say. Most came out as the result of either his 2007 conviction or the Rodney Reed appeals process. Fennell was jealous and possessive, violent and volatile, his ex-girlfriend Pamela said, and he would often shine his police cruiser's spotlight into her home and speak expletives at her through the car's amplified speaker. Pamela also said he held her against her will in the convenience store she worked at. Co-workers called police, who came and escorted Fennell out, Pamela and others said. A complaint was filed for that, but when a copy was asked for, the Giddings police said no such report ever existed. While a policeman in Giddings from 1995 to 1998, a pretty short period, Fennell was named in 2 separate lawsuits that were settled out of court. Both were for the use of excessive force, the system's more swallowable term for police brutality. Those were far from the only accusations of such, according to the then Lee County District Attorney, Stephen Kang, who called Fennell a very scary guy. But the police department and the Texas Rangers, according to Kang, declined to investigate those accusations. In 1998, Jimmy Lewis Fennell Jr. left the Giddings Police Department and took a job with Georgetown PD. He was back home in the small city where he'd graduated high school. In the years between being hired by the city of Georgetown and his 2007 conviction, many more accusations were made, including an accusation that he strip-searched and raped a woman after pulling her over, and accusations that he forced another woman to strip and dance for him after pulling her over for a crooked license plate. Other unspecified incidents also came out after Fennell's watered-down guilty plea. Several women have come forward since, some who never reported Fennell sexually assaulting or stalking them, because reporting a cop to the cops often produces no results, or even worse, produces negative ones. Virtually all of the many complaints by women that were reported against Officer Fennell were completely ignored by the Georgetown police. When Rachel Cook went missing on January 10, 2002, from her Northlake subdivision home in Williamson County on the outskirts of Georgetown, Jimmy Fennell Jr. was a Georgetown PD patrolman. Rachel's father, Robert Cook, stopped journaling in July of 2007, just a few months before Fennell kidnapped and raped a 20-year-old woman. So it's unclear what he thought of the Fennell situation, if he thought the policeman could possibly be involved in his daughter's disappearance. It's just as unclear if his name ever made it into the Rachel Cook investigation in any official capacity. But the name Jimmy Fennell has been brought up by folks online, in social media comments, etc., concerning Rachel's case. If he was involved in the 1996 murder of his fiancée Stacy Stites, he likely learned a thing or two about covering up a crime. Fennell was undoubtedly very familiar with Georgetown and the surrounding area, and probably would know spots where a body is least likely to be found. Almost definitely, as a Georgetown patrolman in 2002 and on, Fennell was involved in the searches for Rachel, and maybe even had his foot in the door of the investigation to a point. Jimmy Lewis Fennell Jr. is a predator, undeniably. That much is perfectly clear. Once again, I spoke too soon last episode. We've got one more episode to go, I promise, just one more, to discuss another potential suspect. We're going to put it out much earlier than usual, shortly after the release of this episode. If you have any information about the disappearance of Rachel Louise Cook, please contact the Williamson County Sheriff's Office at 512-948-2911 or their cold case tip line at 512-943-5204. The Austin American Statesman, the Austin Daily Texan, the Observer, the Guardian, theappeal.org, courthousenews.com, usatoday.com, kxan.com, kvue.com, and the Journal of Robert Cook were used as sources for this episode. You can support the show at patreon.com/gonecoldpodcast. There, you can get the show ad-free and enjoy Patreon-exclusive episodes that tell stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them. I get those out as much as I can, which is not as often as I would like. We also donate some proceeds to DNASolves.com and the Fort Worth Cold Case Support Group. Speaking of those two great causes, you can help solve cold cases and help identify Jane and John Doe's by supporting one of the many crowdfunding efforts at DNASolves.com, and you can upload your DNA data to the database there. It's only used for law enforcement investigations. DNA Solves is Othram Incorporated, the folks who solved the Carla Walker case alongside the Fort Worth Police Department. If you want to help the Fort Worth Police solve a cold case, you can donate directly to them at fwpdcoldcasesupport.org. We'll provide a link to both DNA Solves and the Fort Worth Police Cold Case Support Group in the episode's show notes. Another way you can support Gone Cold is by leaving us a 5-star rating and written review on iTunes or wherever else you listen. Those reviews help Gone Cold's visibility, which helps new listeners find us, which increases the potential for someone with information hearing the show and reporting what they know to authorities. We appreciate more than words can express any support you give Gone Cold, DNASolves.com, the Fort Worth Police Cold Case Support Group, or any other folks whose cause is to provide long overdue justice to victims or the families of victims. So thank you in advance. Thanks for listening, y'all.